You're here because you want to understand things deeply, right?
Uh-huh.
To cut through the noise and get to the heart of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today we're diving into a fascinating way of thinking about ethics, virtue ethics. It's a bit different because instead of focusing on rules you should follow, it asks you to think about, well, the kind of person you want to be.
That's right. And, you know, what's interesting is that so many ethical discussions revolve around what's the right action? Should I do this or that?
Yeah.
Virtue ethics, as we see in the excerpts from Dr. Spiegel, it shifts that focus to character. It's about cultivating certain qualities within yourself.
Exactly. We've touched on other approaches before, like utilitarianism aiming for the best outcome, or Kantian ethics centered on universal duties.
Right, the principle-based one.
But virtue ethics kind of says, hold on, what if we focus on building good people? And, you know, from that, good actions will naturally flow.
If we connect this to history, this isn't exactly a brand new idea. As Dr. Spiegel points out, its roots go way, way back to ancient Greece. You've got thinkers like Socrates and Plato.
Mm-hmm. Laying the groundwork.
But it was Aristotle, particularly in his work Nicomachean Ethics, who really laid out the most comprehensive system of virtue ethics that we still talk about today.
Okay, so Aristotle steps onto the scene and he's grappling with this big question. What's the ultimate goal for us as humans? What's our telos? That inherent purpose we're all aiming for.
And his answer is eudaimonia. Now, when you hear happiness, you might think of like a fleeting feeling. A good mood.
Yeah, temporary.
But eudaimonia is much richer. It's often described as flourishing or a deep sense of well-being. And for Aristotle, achieving this state of flourishing is deeply connected to what makes us uniquely human, our capacity for reason.
So if our ability to reason is what sets us apart, then the best life, the one that leads to this profound well-being, is what Aristotle called the contemplative life. Now, when I first hear contemplative, I picture someone, you know, in quiet meditation.
Right, off in a corner somewhere.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's more than that for Aristotle.
Precisely. It's not just passive reflection. For Aristotle, the contemplative life is about actively using reason in everything we do. It's about bringing thoughtful, critical thinking to our creative work, how we organize our societies, how we approach our jobs. I mean, every part of life should be guided by reason.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So he even distinguished this life of reason from other common pursuits,
right,
like a life focused solely on pleasure and wealth.
Right. The life of enjoyment.
Or a life dedicated to gaining honor and a good reputation, like a leader or a statesman.
Exactly. He looks at these different ways of life and argues that while pleasure and wealth are often just means to an end, you know, you use them to get something else.
Mm-hmm.
And a statesman's honor depends on what other people think.
Which can be fickle.
Totally.
Mm.
But the contemplative life, the pursuit of wisdom and understanding, has value in itself. It's not just a stepping stone to something else, and it's much more stable than fleeting fame or fortune.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because this emphasis on wisdom, on really understanding things, echoes some pretty fundamental ideas in other traditions, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Dr. Spiegel even mentions Proverbs 4.7, wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom, though it cost all you have, get understanding. It seems like this high value placed on wisdom isn't unique to Aristotle.
That's a really important connection to make. And Aristotle viewed ethics as foundational for something even broader.
Mm-hmm.
Politics and how we organize society. His goal wasn't just about individual flourishing in isolation,
right,
but about building a just community, a just civil society. And he believed that requires its citizens to be virtuous. You need good people to have a good society.
Okay, so we keep using the word virtue. How exactly did Aristotle define what a virtue actually is? What does it mean for something or someone to be virtuous?
For Aristotle, virtue is directly linked to that idea of telos, of purpose or function. When something or someone performs its intended function excellently, that's when we can say it possesses virtue. Think about a really good chef's knife. Its virtue lies in its ability to cut precisely, which is its purpose, its function.
Gotcha. So applying that to us, a virtuous person is someone who fulfills their purpose as a human being. Well,
yeah.
But we all have different roles and lives, right? How does virtue show up in those different areas? I mean, I'm not a knife.
Right, exactly. That's a crucial point. Aristotle recognized that we show excellence, these virtues, in different aspects of our lives, depending on our roles and relationships. A great teacher excels at teaching, a caring nurse at providing care, a supportive friend at being there for you. Virtue is context dependent. It's about functioning well within those specific parts of your life, your specific roles, like being a good uncle or a good neighbor.
And Dr. Spiegel breaks down these virtues into two main kinds: intellectual virtues and moral virtues. What's the key difference between those?
Okay, so intellectual virtues, things like understanding and wisdom, are mainly developed through learning, instruction, study. You can, you know, acquire knowledge simply by reading and listening.
Right, like taking a class.
Exactly. But moral virtues, like courage and generosity, are different. They require practice, training, and the development of good habits. They're not things you just know. They're things you have to become.
It's like learning a new skill, isn't it? You can read all about how to play guitar, but you won't actually get good until you practice those chords over and over again.
Perfect analogy.
Dr. Spiegel used the analogy of becoming a good basketball player. You have to get on the court and shoot, practice dribbling, run drills.
Exactly the same principle. And this is where the concept of habituation comes in. Aristotle really stressed that we become virtuous by repeatedly doing virtuous things. We develop generous habits by being generous, courageous habits, by acting courageously. It's about intentionally shaping our character through our actions over time.
And I remember Dr. Spiegel sharing a personal example about consciously practicing generosity through tipping, making it a regular habit, almost like forcing yourself initially until it becomes second nature. So it's not just about knowing what's right, but actually putting it into practice consistently until it becomes part of who you are.
That's the core idea.
Now, another key idea in Aristotle's virtue ethics is that virtue often lies in a balance between two extremes. Can you explain that? The golden mean?
Yes, the doctrine of the mean. What's insightful here is Aristotle's observation that many moral virtues exist as a middle ground between two vices, one where you have too little of a quality and one where you have too much.
Okay, give me an example.
Take courage again. Too little courage and you have cowardice, failing to act when you should, being paralyzed by fear. Too much and you have foolhardiness or recklessness, acting rashly without thinking, taking unnecessary risks.
Right.
Courage is that balanced point in the middle, acting appropriately and thoughtfully in the face of danger or difficulty.
And you have this whole framework of virtues mapped out like this, right? Mm-hmm. Like with how we experience pleasure, the virtue is temperance.
Right. Avoiding both being completely indifferent to pleasure, which he called insensibility, and being totally controlled by it, which is profligacy or self-indulgence.
Finding that healthy middle ground,
mm-hmm.
and how we handle our possessions, it's generosity. Finding that balance between being stingy.
Yeah, the miser.
And being so extravagant, it's irresponsible, just throwing money away.
Yeah.
Dr. Spiegel mentioned Sartre's example of the prodigious giver, right?
Yes, someone who gives excessively, maybe to their own detriment or without proper discernment. Generosity is giving the right amount to the right people at the right time for the right reasons. It's nuanced.
And there were others too, like healthy pride versus being petty or vain, or wit versus being boorish or a buffoon.
Exactly. Modesty between being sheepish and shameless. The list goes on. And it's important to remember, as Dr. Spiegel notes, that what's seen as virtuous or where exactly that mean lies can vary somewhat across different cultures or contexts.
Also,
well, think about something like expressing opinions. In a culture that highly values, say, speaking your mind very directly, what might be considered honest in one place could be seen as blunt or even rude in another culture that values more indirect communication. The virtue of tact might be weighted differently.
That really highlights that virtue isn't just a fixed, rigid list, but something that can be nuanced and depend on the situation and cultural context. Now, beyond just understanding these virtues, how do we actually cultivate them? We mentioned habit, but Dr. Spiegel also mentioned the significance of moral exemplars.
Absolutely. While reading about virtuous people, you know, biographies or historical accounts can be inspiring, it can be even more powerful to be around people who truly embody those virtues in your own life.
Like role models.
Exactly. Observing their actions, their character in real life situations, how they handle challenges, how they treat people, it gives us a tangible model to strive for. It prompts us to think about the kind of person we want to be and how we can grow those qualities in ourselves.
It's like having someone who shows you the way through how they live,
mm-hmm.
not just tells you.
Mm-hmm. It makes it real.
And then our source also touched on the work of a more recent thinker in virtue ethics, Alistair MacIntyre, and his emphasis on the importance of narrative and community. How does that fit in?
Yeah, McIntyre brought this crucial idea that our understanding of virtues is deeply intertwined with the stories of our own lives and the communities we're part of. He talks about us being characters in ongoing narratives. The roles we play within those communities, family member, citizen, professional, friend, and the overarching narratives we participate in, they shape the virtues we come to value and aim for. It adds this layer of social context and personal history to Aristotle's framework. Our virtues make sense within authority.
And when you think about it, this focus on developing your character, on actively working towards virtue, it's a really strong motivator, isn't it? It feels more personal. It's not just about avoiding punishment or following external rules, but about genuinely wanting to become a better version of yourself. And Dr. Spiegel draws a compelling parallel here with Christian teachings on striving for godliness.
This is a fascinating connection he makes. Dr. Spiegel points out how the Apostle Paul uses the image of athletes training rigorously for competition with discipline, focus, self-control to illustrate how Christians should train themselves to be godly. That's in 1 Corinthians 9.
Right, the analogy of running the race.
Exactly. And he also mentions 1 Timothy 4:7-8, where Paul explicitly tells Timothy to train yourself to be godly. Practices like prayer, studying scripture, acts of service, fellowship. These spiritual disciplines can be seen as the practical exercises, the training regimen for cultivating godly character traits or virtues.
So these practices are like the exercises for building spiritual virtues, just like practicing scales develops musical skill or lifting weights builds physical strength.
Precisely. It requires intentional effort and discipline.
Now, one potential question some might have, especially compared to ethics focused strictly on impartial rules, is this idea of impartiality. It sounds like virtue ethics, particularly Aristotle's version, offers a slightly different take on that.
Yeah.
Does it allow for partiality?
That's right. Aristotle had a, I think, quite realistic view of human relationships.
Yeah.
He understood that we naturally have particular obligations and affections for those closest to us, our family, our friends.
Yeah, that feels intuitive.
Dr. Spiegel uses this vivid thought experiment. Imagine you're in a canoe, it capsizes, and you're with your mother and, say, an oncologist who holds the cure for cancer. You can only save one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
While a strict utilitarian might argue you have a duty to save the oncologist because they can potentially save more lives in the future.
The greater good calculation.
Right. Aristotle would likely say it's understandable, perhaps even morally appropriate, to save your mother because of that unique foundational relationship and the duties that come with it. Virtue ethics allows space for those special loyalties.
It definitely resonates with our natural instincts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It feels inherently right to prioritize those we love. So virtue ethics seems to take those personal connections and community bonds into account in a way that some other more abstract ethical theories might not.
I think that's one of its real strengths. It acknowledges the importance of relationships in the moral life.
But like any theory, it's not perfect. Our source also highlighted some limitations of virtue ethics, especially when it comes to giving us specific guidance on what the right action is in every single situation.
This is a really important point to consider, a common critique. While virtue ethics does a great job of describing what a virtuous person is like, what character traits they possess, it doesn't always provide a clear-cut answer on what the right thing to do is in a particular complex moment. There's no set of universal rules or a calculation principle that you can just apply to get the right answer every time.
And this can lead to tricky situations where different virtues might seem to pull you in different directions, right? A moral conflict.
Exactly. Dr. Spiegel brings up that classic, maybe slightly cliche scenario. Does his outfit make me look fat?
Yes, the dreaded question.
Right. The virtue of honesty might push you to give a truthful, perhaps critical answer. But the virtue of kindness or compassion might suggest a more tactful, maybe even slightly evasive response to spare someone's feelings.
So what does virtue ethics say to do?
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't give you a simple formula for deciding which virtue, honesty, or kindness should take priority in that specific situation. It relies more on the virtuous person's practical wisdom, their phronesis, to discern the right course of action in context. The source also mentions that anecdote about Abraham Lincoln navigating that tension between being painfully honest and being kind.
So it sounds like, just like the other ways of thinking about ethics we've looked at, virtue ethics has both its strengths, its focus on character, motivation, community, and its weaknesses, particularly in providing that clear action guidance in every dilemma.
Precisely. It gives us a really valuable framework for understanding the importance of who we are and who we are becoming, but it might need to be complemented by other approaches, other considerations, when we're facing really complex decisions about specific actions or potential rule conflicts.
So to wrap up our deep dive today, we've seen that virtue ethics, particularly drawing from Aristotle, is all about putting the development of excellent character traits and virtues at the very heart of ethical living. It sees cultivating these traits as the path to true well-being, to that state of eudaimonia, human flourishing.
And this focus on character, on becoming a good person, leads to a crucial question for you listening. What character traits do you value most deeply? And maybe more importantly, how are you actively working to cultivate those virtues in your own life, in your everyday interactions, and the choices you make? It's an ongoing project.
It really pushes you to think beyond just following a list of rules, doesn't it? And to consider the kind of person you are striving to become. So here's a final thought to maybe mull over. How might a greater emphasis on developing virtue in ourselves, in our education systems, in our public life, rather than solely focusing on adhering to strict rules or calculating outcomes, how might that fundamentally change how we approach the challenges we face, both as individuals and as a society? Maybe building better character really is a key, perhaps an overlooked key, to creating not just a more ethical, but ultimately a better, more flourishing world for everyone. Something to think about.